It is 5:15. I am going to call the meeting to order and we'll just quickly go around the room and indicate who's here. Audrey Nelson.
Andrew Plowman.
Rick Fagerly.
Eric Rudningen.
Julie Osmus.
Steve Okens.
All right, thank you very much. Mr. Fagerly has, Councilmember Fagerly has indicated he would like to be out of here by 5:45 or he needs to be out of here by 5:45. So we'll see how far we get in that half an hour. But we have nobody here from the public, so we will move on from public comment. And our first item is action item, and it is MNO reimbursement contract. And Mr. Rendington is here, I think, to address that.
Yeah, so this is the maintenance and operations reimbursement that MnDOT does gives to the airports in the state of Minnesota. The contract is very similar to the contracts we've had for the last 20 some odd years since they started the program. The biggest change that they have made on page 2.5.2, they have some pretty specific dates they want us to turn in reimbursements by. So that doesn't really affect the city other than it affects me. We need to make sure we have it in on time. Over the years, what's happened is all airports are the same. You say, oh yeah, I'll get that done. And then what happens to the MnDOT folks is it's the end of the year and they're getting 30 of these things, you know. So that's one of the bigger changes, if you will. The reimbursement rate is the same. It's 75% of our reimbursable costs is what it comes out to be. And that for us ends up being between $50,000 and $60,000 a year is about what we get back from the city. Or from the state, I'm sorry. And so we the public works guys keep track of their time. We put a rental rate against the equipment they're using. There's some of the Oasis Aero time that's reimbursable because we do clean the bathrooms and we change lamps on the runway and things like that. So we keep track of that time separately and then submit it. So paperwork is due by July 1st, so my hope is to have the resolution to sign this contract on the June 17th council meeting.
Yes. All right. Any questions of Mr. Rendington, or would someone like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to enter the reimbursement contract with MnDOT.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second to ask council to pass a resolution to enter into the reimbursement contract with MnDOT. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. And I will plan to attend the council meeting, too, in case there's additional questions. But,
okay. All right.
We should be good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a good night. Good.
You, too.
Thanks. Take care. We're going to move on to discussion items, but Steve and I talked about the budget calendar. He didn't think we probably needed to approve it, but on the budget calendar, it says City Council adopt budget calendar. So if you would like to look at that list, I would suggest that we make a motion for the council to adopt the budget calendar.
It's pretty boilerplate. Oh, go ahead.
Second. Steve.
Awesome. It's pretty boilerplate and general in nature. One item of change over last year is that all the meetings at the fire station have been removed based on direction from the mayor. We didn't have a lot of attendance at those, and those that were in attendance were primarily council members. So.
Yeah.
He gave direction to remove that and just put it general in nature, where this month we'll send out forms, and now with the interim administrator coming in, we'll meet with him. The mayor and I will schedule a meeting with him, and the mayor's given some direction just so that we kind of confirm those items that he's given. So.
I remember receiving form with if there was anything we wanted in the calendar budget.
We will send that out in this month as well.
Okay.
Along with the departments that are going to be getting it. Okay. Some of the departments are new, so we schedule meetings and meet with them.
That's what you were referencing about sending out this month?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And then we also notify all of the civic groups that have submitted requests in the past, and we've gotten one additional group that we've been directed to send to
somebody just request?
Yes. And the name is escaping me presently.
Wouldn't be Vision 2040 Leadership.
No, it was...
Because there was going to be a discussion about... Because the county was going to give money.
The 2040, I believe, is on the list, and I think they're at a $5,000 level or...
But then the leadership is a leadership program.
Right, and then there's, I know that the city has had a couple participants.
Yep.
This year, so.
No, not this year.
Oh.
Not last year either.
Last year, okay.
But there is one additional civic group in that, I apologize, the name escapes me. The mayor gave us a direction because they had requested to be. But they get forms, and some of the requirements of the civic groups are that they have to provide historical, budgetary historical information as well as financial.
So do we think it was like a cultural thing, like a Cinco de Mayo thing, or
no? It's an organization in the community that hasn't.
Was it the Fucha? No, was it the Fucha? I'm not sure.
I apologize.
Just trying to help.
Yeah.
There was something that came though, kind of out of sequence, just saying they wanted to ask the city for money, but if they can ask, does the community know that we're accepting applications, or
we do not advertise that? Yeah. It's basically those that have asked in the past and have been awarded some, and or have approached the mayor or council members. I mean, we certainly can do that.
Is that something we should advertise?
I don't know. I'm curious because I mean it's a pretty small group, and there's a purpose. I think the connection back to why we do it, but I don't really know.
There could be some organization out there that is really in need of funding. That could be a newly founded thing that could be trying to establish and doing really good things in the community. That, you know, even a little shot of cash, city support could really help.
I know that it's kind of come full circle where the city used to have to groups, and then they contributed a dollar amount to a. I think it was the Southwest Minnesota Foundation, and we're referring people to them to apply, and then now we're back to entertaining different groups in their requests.
Is that something just accept as is, or is there something I don't know? I don't know how that process was developed. So,
you know, if I kind of feel like if it. We should either decide if it's something that we're going to just, if we're going to limit it, then I feel like it should be limited. But if it is an open application process, then it should be something that people are aware it's an open application process. Because otherwise it feels like it's kind of doing a disservice to, like, if you know about it, then you qualify to apply. But if you don't know, then
don't. How about if we ask Mr. Oakens to just ask that question, perhaps, or look back once to see, and bring it back to our next finance meeting, just with how that decision was made with who gets to apply.
And who is applying.
Yeah.
Who are those groups?
Okay.
And because I get Wilmerfest, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
Wilmerfest.
Yeah.
We used to get the art council.
Yeah. They no longer apply.
Right, but they're in the budget.
Not
budget.
The arts council.
And no, that information would be on our last year, but I can bring that back.
Well, yeah, they're in the budget now.
So,
but we never gave.
No, but that request for downtown was part of that.
That's I can bring that information a 3-year history of the groups and what they've gotten and what they've requested. And, back to the next meeting. I'll put it on our calendar.
Just for information.
Yep.
Yeah, that would be good for discussion. The one thing I think for us to be thinking about once the mayor presents his budget with, and how do we want the council to work through that information after the mayor's presented it? If there is no public input, do we want to hold a finance meeting? Do we want a full council finance meeting to walk through the budget afterwards? So,
I'd say a full council meeting.
Okay. So you can just be thinking about that, because It is not on, it'll be kind of after the mayor passes it over, we need to figure out how we're going to handle it.
Like a special finance meeting, special meeting?
Or is it?
There is a.
We have a fifth.
There is a fifth.
We have a third Monday, or whatever.
July has got a fifth one as well as September. So after the mayor presents his budget to you, in September, the 30th would be available as a work session or a special finance meeting, however you would want to handle it.
Which is probably good timing.
Yeah.
Let's tentatively think about that one, and then, we have a motion and a second to accept the budget calendar, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Do we have to amend it?
No.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, motion carries, okay. The next item is the purchasing policy, and it would be my recommendation that we just, accept that this as information right now. The state, and Steve can talk about it, but in this last year, they changed the figure for what's required to do a contract. But our purchasing policy, we will need to update to go to the state limits. But I sort of feel like we're in a state of transition between, with administrator to interim administrator to the next. And before we look at changing our limits, that we kind of settle down and get some sense of, you know, back to where we're at. So I don't know if you have any comments on it.
Yeah, this has been, it was initiated some time ago by staff. And the reason that it was initiated was because of the statute change going from $100,000 to $175,000 as far as the bidding requirements. And so the other limits then staff looked at and had just recommended increasing those as well. And I know that there was some discussion about if those should have been increased at the same time or not. And so with the change in administration, it would be somewhat helpful to know if where this administrator's come from, what their limits were. But at some point in time, I think it would be staff's recommendation to at least raise that upper limit to statute so that we follow that and I guess don't require more burdensome as far as bidding requirements. A lot of the things that you'll find that are in that category are being purchased through the state contract when you don't need to follow the bidding requirements because it's already been done. Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of will follow it. What statute says, you can be more restrictive, so there's nothing wrong with it where it's at, but that discussion probably should take place on the lower end ones.
So we could change items 1 and 2 as you have in there, but not change the authorization limits at this time.
Yeah,
or would you recommend we wait and review it all at once?
I think it would be better to let the new administration come in and maybe they can shed some light on what their community did and where they were at, and we can do some more comparison and ask other regional centers what they do for their purchasing policy and have some more information than what we provided in the past.
Go ahead, Julie.
Who came up with the $25,000 for directors?
That was basically the administrator's office that had come up with that. $25,000, I believe, is the lower end on the statute. Between $25,000 and $175,000,
okay.
You are required to have two quotes. The $5,000 limit is the capital for capitalizing assets for the city on our capitalized program. That's where that generated.
I don't know if you two have it in front of you, but what was being requested is that the city administrator go to $175,000,
yep.
And that the department directors go to $25,000. And I know we had that discussion. I mean, there was a request to do that before, and we said no. And I think just for me, in light of all the changes that are coming, I think until we're comfortable even with final kind of thing, what should we do? So go ahead, Andrew.
I was just That's what I was wondering about, is wasn't there a change that did take place at one time that the council authorized, maybe 2 years back?
Yeah, it went to the 25. It had
up
been
from 15, right?
20. It up had from, been 20.
Oh, it had been 20.
Yeah, and so it went to 25 because that was, again, the lower end of anything less than 25, you don't need two quotes. Between 25 and 100, it used to be you needed quotes, a minimum of two. Anything over 100 was bidding. Sealed bids, and yep. So that's where that went from 20 to 25 to kind of follow statute.
Go ahead, Julie.
Okay, so we just in Public Works, Public Safety talked about the issue that Sean ran into because he couldn't go up to the 175.
And truthfully, that actually is ending up saving us money.
So because we didn't have
conversation, and. I guess my comfort level is staying where we're at right now, but unless there's a reason to change, so. But I hear what you're saying, too.
Staff can send out a request to all the 19 regional centers that we kind of do some comparisons of how they're handling certain things and see what kind of responses we get on what their levels are and have that information for a future meeting after discussions with the interim administrator when he gets here.
Did we talk about the RFQ thing at the meeting?
We just briefly touched on
that ended up saving money?
No, that was because we were wondering where the money was coming from, so okay. We had a conversation.
I'm like, did I miss that?
No,
okay.
You did not. Yeah, well, and I guess I had talked to Sean about it, too.
Oh, my God, you know, okay.
But, I mean, that there's pros and cons.
Yeah.
You know, but in certain situations, if you have that where they can request the quotes, then you don't have the formalized process where the bids come in and you end up with, you know, just say two bidders and it's a blind bid and they're coming in high, now you're stuck.
The primary difference between quotes and bidding is that you can just do a direct contact and you can negotiate on quotes, where on the bidding process, you have to go through the advertising, the publishing.
And you have to spell out all your parameters ahead of time, and then those bids follow exactly those parameters versus some negotiation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Julie, when I said we saved money, all I meant, it is back to the utilities, and we will be paying as it was negotiated with the utilities. So we didn't have to come up with the actual cash at this time.
Good.
That's what I meant by... Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the part that Steve mentioned about, you know, negotiations and getting quotes leaves room to negotiate with the bidder versus the other process.
Okay.
So you'll bring that back to us?
Yes.
A couple meetings?
Yep. After the interim administrator is here and has had some time to kind of
Let's move on. If that's all right, we've accepted that, right?
Probably schedule that for the July 18th.
Okay.
Calendar is for.
Thank you.
The purchasing policy.
All right. Next item is tax abatement, tax increment, and I'm just going to let Mr. Elkins talk about this. This was a request by a council member to review.
Yeah, Councilman Meske had at one council meeting asked, because there was, a tax increment proposal or request or abatement, I can't remember which one, that came before the council, and he just kind of wanted to have an idea of what the differences were.
I thought what he was going for there was when you do a presentation at a city council meeting and you're talking about a TIF,
okay,
that for the general public, that if you explain the two, then there was an understanding.
Oh, okay.
Unless I'm wrong.
When you say that, I was thinking about just a document that's available, and that I know that the EDC has a thing, but even if this just kind of is available out there, that here's the difference between the two, because it's almost like we have to remind ourselves each time.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, so I can just maybe mention the three bullet points here tonight, and then have Mr. Ramstead put that as a item of discussion that when there is TIF or abatement discussion, to hit on those and the differences, and so that during the public hearing, which most of these require, that it's explained in
right.
more detail.
And I'm not talking, you know, major explanation. I think
yep.
just a brief overview.
And I think these three bullet points, if you look at them, yep. I mean, the TIF can be used for longer durations. They come up to 25 years, where abatements are 15 years. And then TIF requires approval only by the municipality, where abatements require it from all taxing jurisdictions, the school and the county as well. And then TIF is subject to more legal restrictions than abatements. And that I would leave to the attorneys to explain on the legal matters and restrictions. And it's basically the but-for test, what they call but-for, if the project would not happen and except for the financing.
I think Sean's concern was TIF, you usually have to create some jobs. And for the residential part, you don't have to.
And historically, the city hasn't used, until recently, TIF for residential. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if I may.
Go ahead. Yes.
Yeah, I every time it comes up, we are always flooded with questions because there's this misconception, misnomer, whatnot, that tax abatement or TIF financing is giving money, is taking tax dollars from everybody in Wilmer and giving those dollars
to someone else,
to this entity. And I think people don't understand that. And so, you know, it's similar to, if you've ever seen it's kind of a funny, almost childish video, but how a bill becomes a law.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about, wouldn't it be nice if there was some media piece, some real simple media piece that could be on the website. What is tax abatement? What is TIF financing? You know, and some, it'd even be worth a little bit of money, I think, to just get it out there in the public so that each time it comes up, we're not flooded with phone calls. Don't use my tax dollars for that. Because the truth of the matter is, residents and taxpayers' dollars are not being taken and given to other people. It's maybe a deferment of taxes or, you know, reallocation.
Yeah.
But it's different than I think what a lot of people think it is. And to be able to explain that to people in a way that they understand it, and once they understand it, then they generally feel differently about it.
So we have to do somebody does an annual review that they're meeting the requirements of tax abatement.
That would be the planning and development offices and filing
so
reports.
Maybe even his concept could be brought to Dr. Ramstead to review this when you review the annual.
Yeah. And if RAC 8 has any time on their hands, I can see a classic, a good, just have somebody say, well, I don't think my money should go for that. And then somebody explain, well, this is really how it works. But
it's kind of like the did you know scenario that they used to do for different topics.
Yeah. But just, and then be able to have that for people to click on.
And our production quality at RAC 8 is like skyrocketing,
mm-hmm.
like in terms of the quality of the productions that they're putting out.
Yeah.
I see no reason why we couldn't put a piece together like that, and it would be a really good public outreach piece.
Yeah.
So I will do those two things as it relates to tax increment, tax abatement, is contact the planning office and have them, when there is a public hearing, do a short explanation of it and work with RAC 8 to develop a do-you-know type scenario to put on the website.
But isn't it when the assessor does the valuation, you get a total valuation for the city,
mm-hmm.
and that's what your taxes are on, a percentage. So the value of apartment complex might be $2 million today. They get that money back to them that they would have been paying. So someone has to make up the difference. So taxpayers do pay a little higher tax on their property because they're missing out on the taxes.
On the tax increment portion.
TIF.
Yeah.
On the income. But it's just, you're still getting the same taxes. You're still getting the same taxes as if they hadn't done the project. So
but the valuation is going into the assessor's.
You're saying the valuation
total.
Is going into the total.
Yeah. So if
the taxes are staying the same.
If the city's valuation is $100 million.
Yep.
And then this building gets built and the value goes up to 105 million. Someone's got to pick up that $5 million, so it goes back to the taxpayer.
You're saying to keep the ratio proportionate.
Yeah.
But I would argue that, say, like if it's a residential, is that all those people that maybe moved in for that, they're making up in, whether you call it sales tax that they're buying on the gas on County Road 5 or anything else.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with property tax.
No, but
true, but it goes back into our...
follow Rick's scenario just to see, you know, to be able to answer that question, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And make no mistake about it, at the very end, it comes down to a philosophical debate about taxes. My stance is anytime that you can lessen some, you know, you get a lot of people that say, why do they get a tax abatement, but I don't?
Right.
And I'm kind of like, well, anytime anybody can get a tax benefit, even if I'm not getting a tax, you know, I don't look at what my neighbor's tax refund was and then spite them because mine wasn't as much. But that's just me, and so that's the rabbit hole we end up going down when we have these.
But I support them. TIF and tax abatement, because if you can get people into better housing than they're living in now, that's a good thing.
We presently have four tax increment districts: Genio, GM Trucking, Legacy, 15th Street Flats, and then the J&H LLC isn't quite finished yet. So
the new apartments.
Yeah, that'll be a fifth one.
Okay.
Yep. And what's Oil Air? That's
Dorn. That was an abatement.
Abatement. Okay.
Yeah, that was an abatement. There's like four or five abatements, and some of those have expired too. So those will be footnoted in the financial.
Even the discussion we just had around the table tells us that we all need to learn a little bit more. Yep. So I think that's good. That's good. So we're good with that? All right. We're going to move on to the next item, which is deferred / suspense and agricultural assessments. And I'm going to let Steve explain
this. There's a lot of information in there, and basically the last couple pages are the last action the council has taken, and that was in March of this year, where the expired life had expired on some of the suspended assessments, and so there was about $200,000 of suspended assessments that were written off because they had exceeded their useful life. There is a total of about $950,000 of ag and suspended assessments. The ag assessments are for agricultural land within the city limits. The suspended assessments are basically for property outside the city limits that is on the fringe. Example would be the J&H, now the property they bought has just come in. There was very few suspended assessments against that. Another big area is the Olson property, south of the golf course, east of County First Street. There's, I think it's 19th Avenue, northeast.
North of Swenson's
development. Yes, north of Swenson development, straight across from Jack and Karen Bear, where they live. There's a large amount there. So that's the difference between the two. The ag property is about about half of that, $450,000. Example being where it can be beneficial on ag is that when the ag property is developed, and the property where Schweder's purchased is an example where we just purchase it, and they have to pay off the ag exemption or the current prices for improvements, whichever is higher. And so in that instance, and the community investment fund is booking these receivables because the debt has been usually paid off. And so that's the part of the financing that we've talked about on street programs and stuff about scheduling over the 10-year period. So on that $450,000, a large portion of that is for the Gesh property, and they have inquired to the city about what would it take to clear the property of any assessments. And so in that case as well, the dollar amounts would be more because the current prices are more than what the ag deferments are. So in that case, the community investment fund would benefit. In the other flip side of it, on if they exceed the useful life, and that only primarily pertains to those that are outside the city on suspended assessments, where the city wrote off $200,000, then the community investment fund kind of takes it in that case. So there's pros and cons, but that's the kind of the clearinghouse of all the assessments that aren't paid from people that are certified against them. So it's just an informational item that is taken into consideration where we look at the 10-year financing.
You intend to use some of this in our structure of our bonds this year?
Yeah, and I will explain this on the June 20th meeting when I bring the structuring for our 2019 street improvement program to you for financing.
Go ahead, Andrew.
Good question then. So how does the process work if a piece of agricultural land isn't currently in the city limits, but it abuts the city limits, mm-hmm. and then it gets platted for future development, but then that stalls out, right? So then they continue leasing that land to a farmer or whatnot. What is that? It just in limbo? Is that still outside of city limits, or what happens there?
If there's ag land outside the city limits, the only way it can be platted is if it's annexed into the city limits.
So once there's a plat map,
upon annexation, they would have to pay the suspended assessments because they don't qualify for the ag exemption.
So if it's platted, it is within city limits then.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. What about that area? I would say south of Haug Implement, out on 9. On the other side of the bypass, there's probably about 20 houses in there.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Gimsey's? Mm-hmm. I know it's not, but okay. They were able to plat that and make their own little development.
It's up to just the township and the county.
Now, if
why couldn't the township, just like he's saying, if it butted up to the city, the township just said, we're going to let them plat it?
Well, they could, but they're not going to have city services.
Okay.
And so there would be no assessments. And if and when they would ask to be annexed into the city, the city's past practice has been to require them to put city services in, and then at that point they'd pay 100% of those costs.
Oh boy.
But there's no suspended.
They'll have wells and septic.
It's similar to
Eagle's Landing.
Yeah, it's similar to Swan Lake, and there's a I think it's the east side of whatever that drive is up there. There's a part that's still outside the city, and they have septic systems and wells. And
well, and I had just wondered because of the land south of me, J&C Enterprises, so they have a whole ton of lots and everything like that, but I don't think that's ever going to get off the ground, and I wonder what's ever going to happen to that land, because it just, it's alfalfa year after year, and I know that if you pull up the GIS, I know it's all platted and everything.
I believe.
And it goes into tax.
They are under the ag exemption, actually.
Are they?
But you wonder, like Gesh's property, how long are we going to live with a cornfield in the middle of town?
Yeah, and so
should be soybeans this year.
And then, but that's gone in and out of good standing, right?
I believe so. And if you recall, I think it was a couple of years ago, we brought forth to the council a kind of a reclassification of property to where their tax rate was like 1%.
Okay.
And now it would be the same as what the budding township.
Got it.
And so there's incentive there to either unplat it or develop it.
Well, they haven't gotten the memo.
So they're paying a higher tax now than they were before, because now they're paying the township rate instead of the city had a special rate for ag. In the community of like 1% or
but they're currently good on their taxes.
They have applied for ag exemption. Their property taxes are all good, and that $17,000 number that you see up there is each year they have to apply for ag exemption. So it's reviewed that they are actually farming it.
Yeah, and the rest of their lots must be back in good standing if they can build on them.
We have no tax forfeited property after the sale of all the Oslo Meadow. I think there's maybe one parcel.
Well, I know they were sitting in that category for a while, but there's a grace, well, not a grace.
6 or 7 years that they can.
There's a while that they can mess around.
Well, why? But we have, yeah, we have none that are tax forfeited this, which is unusual for a community.
Yeah,
one parcel maybe.
It's good though.
It's good.
Yep. Slamming up houses.
So we'll talk about this again too at the financing.
Okay. Next is just to review our meeting scheduled, and our next meeting will be June 20th. And Steve will be prepared to give us the May monthly report. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about assessment policy. You also mentioned bond.
Under the capital financing, we'll have the 2019 financing, which will just kind of briefly update you again on these. And then the intent to reimburse resolution is planned to come to you for the local option sales tax. I've been in conversation with the bond people, and it's best to do the intent to reimburse for the full amount, since there's a cap of $30 million, and that way it allows us not to have come back each time for the intent to reimburse, but anytime we would do borrowing, we would bring it back to you. And there's been conversations of being able to place some of the financing locally with some of the institutions. They've stepped forward and said that they'd be willing to formulate that. So we're coordinating between them and our bond consultants, even for the 19th Street financing. We've done that for the last couple years, to where we've made it available to all the lending institutions in town, and they've stepped up, and those that wanted to participated. And we've played slightly more interest, but we have worked very well in working with the local lending institutions, and they've been willing to buy the bonds and kind of resell them. So
the closing costs a little cheaper.
Yeah, you don't have the ratings, and you save on that end, so the interest rate a little higher. It's pretty close to a wash, but not quite.
Okay. Okay. So,
but if we have to meet on June 20th, isn't it in the standing rules that the finance director then has to buy supper at the downtown block party?
You bet.
That's
hot dogs, prison dogs.
Okay.
Let's
just quick look. The next meeting is July 4th, and we said we would not do a meeting. Are we still okay to skip a meeting? Or
we will schedule accordingly.
Okay. Let's, so right now, yeah, we're still good with that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Any further
business?
And as long
business? As the streets are open, I will buy.
Any other items?
Move to adjourn.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We are adjourned.
So did it...
Oh, just a minute.
Oh.